I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. President Trump said he expected a big number, and the GDP has just been announced. The U.S. economy grew by 4.1% in the last 3 months. The low unemployment rate and the booming stock market are other indicators of the health of the economy, and by those measures, it looks good. Trade and tariffs reveal a more complicated picture. After calling the EU a foe that was clobbering the U.S. on trade, slapping tariffs on imported steel and aluminum, and claiming that trade wars are easy to win, President Trump praised European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker on Wednesday at the White House and announced an open trade policy between the U.S. and Europe.
Already today, the United States and the European Union have a $1 trillion bilateral trade relationship, the largest economic relationship anywhere in the world. We want to further strengthen this trade relationship to the benefit of all American and European citizens. This is why we agreed today, first of all, to work together towards zero tariffs, zero non-tariff barriers, and zero subsidies on non-auto industrial goods. Thank you. Thank you. We will also work to reduce barriers and increase trade in services, chemicals, pharmaceuticals, medical products, as well as soybeans. Soybeans is a big deal. And the European Union is going to start almost immediately to buy a lot of soybeans. They're a tremendous market. Buy a lot of soybeans from our farmers in the Midwest, primarily.
And speaking of soybeans, the Trump administration is planning a $12 billion bailout for farmers hurt by tariffs in a trade war that the president started. Well, today on Radio Times, Trump trade, tariffs, taxes, and the state of the U.S. economy. Joining us here in our Philadelphia studio is Mark Zandi, chief economist of Moody's Analytics. Mark, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty. Good to be here.
Nice to have you with us and joining us by telephone, Mary Lovely. She's a professor of economics at Syracuse University, also a non-resident and senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. Mary Lovely, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Great. Happy to be here.
Nice to have you with us. Mark, let me begin with you. Let me begin with this GDP number, 4.1%. It's a nice number.
It is. It's a good number. We've been here, last time we were here was 4 years ago briefly.
2014, right?
I think it was 2014. Mm-hmm. It was brief, and I think this will be brief as well. Growth is being temporarily juiced by fiscal stimulus. That's deficit finance. We're borrowing money to pay for tax cuts and for big increases in government spending, which will keep things going strongly for the next year. But after that, growth will slow and we'll be back close to the 2% rate of growth we've been experiencing throughout the economic expansion. So I would say, Marty, enjoy it while you can.
And what do we have, a couple of months to enjoy it or
no year.
End of the year?
There's a lot of juice here. Okay. I mean, this is massive tax cuts, massive increases in government spending that are going to be rolled out over the course of the coming year through the mid part of 2019. So I'd say I don't think we'll get consistent 4% growth, but if you told me between now and this time next year the economy grew somewhere around 3, which mm-hmm. is still, you know, good, I'd say that sounds about right to me. The other thing I'd point out, though, that juiced Q2 growth, this is the growth rate, the 4.1% growth rate we got, was we had a lot of exporters trying to get out ahead, particularly the farmers, the soybean farmers in particular. The president mentioned the soybean farmers trying to get out ahead of these tariffs, and so they shipped a lot of stuff, and that temporarily pushed things up. But, of course, there's a dark side, backside to that, which we'll see in the current quarter.
And I do want to get to that. Mary, should we be popping champagne corks?
Well, as Mark said, it's a good number, but I think, you know, you hate to be kind of the downer at the party, but long term, this doesn't look so good. And it's exactly the reason why Mark's saying that the economy is juiced right now. It's the higher government spending and the higher deficit spending, the tax cuts, which have led to a big increase in deficits. I think long term that will lead to higher trade deficits and perhaps more calls for protectionism within the United States. So we're not going to see strong exports next quarter, in my view, and we're going to see the effect of the tariffs hitting various parts of the U.S. economy.
Is this the Trump economy, Mary? He's been in office for about a year and a half. He inherited the economy from the Obama administration. Is this his economy now?
Well, the things that we've been talking about certainly can be laid at his door. The tax cut, for sure. The increase in government spending. There was a failure, really, of the Congress to reach some difficult decisions over the budget, kind of kicking the can down the road. The tariffs certainly are part of the Trump administration's legacy. So I would say, yes, the key features of this particular report are Trumpian.
Well, let me play something the president said earlier today, and this is when the GDP number came in, and here he is talking at the White House about these economic numbers.
At the same time, we are finally cracking down on decades of abusive foreign trade practice. We were abused by companies. We were abused by the companies within countries. But in particular, we were abused by countries themselves, including allies. Abused like no nation has ever been abused on trade before, because we had nobody watching. They stole our jobs and they plundered our wealth. But that ended.
Have we been abused, Mark Zandi?
No.
Like never before?
No. We've done actually quite well in our trade with the rest of the world. One metric of that is the trade balance, the trade deficit. That's been more or less unchanged for the past 10, 15 years. So it's been very balanced trade. I would say China has been a problem. China has not followed the rules, not unsurprisingly. I think we knew that was going to happen. The strategy of dealing with China, though, that the Obama administration was following was to enter into the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That was a free trade deal with the rest of the Pacific Rim, which excluded China because China could not get in because they didn't follow the rules. And ultimately, the thought process was that because this was such a big deal, and if China couldn't be in the club, that they would begin to follow. That was the strategy. Of course, Trump blew that to pieces.
Because we pull out of TPP.
Well, I think it might have been his very first executive order, or maybe a second, you know, saying we're out of this. So that, in my view, was an egregious error. And now, of course, he's trying to force China to follow the rules through tariffs, and so far it hasn't worked.
Well, Mary, let me go back to what happened at the White House earlier this week. He was there with European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker, and it sounded as if he was basically putting an end to whatever trade war had been started with Europe. And I was reading this morning about the Obama administration's transatlantic trade and investment partnership, mm-hmm. and that what the president was talking about on Wednesday is really a version or perhaps a carbon copy of what was happening under the Obama administration to lower trade barriers and to reduce tariffs. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, sure. We were negotiating the Trans-Atlantic Partnership. Those talks broke down, I believe, in 2016. What President Trump is talking about, it still remains to be seen. It was very, vague announcement. But to me, it doesn't look like what we were talking about in the so-called TTIP. First of all, he's clearly limited it to non-auto industrial products. And even though he talked about reducing barriers in services, chemicals, medical products, et cetera, there's no real details behind that. And these reducing non-tariff barriers and subsidies, we haven't even talked about agriculture, clearly no. That wasn't on the list, where subsidies are a big issue. But reducing trade barriers in these areas are very contentious. There are important reasons why those talks broke down before, and none of those reasons have really been removed. To that, you have to add the fact that this is an administration that's been very hostile to trade liberalization. It's an administration which seems to have a passion for going in the opposite direction, which is erecting new trade barriers. So it's very hard to see where this would go in a liberalizing direction.
The president mentioned soybeans several times, Mark Zandi, in that clip that we played. Why is that significant? What do we need to know about soybeans and trade and tariffs, I guess?
Well, it's very important politically, right?
Midwest.
Yeah, it's the part of the country that is the Trump voters, right? I mean, that's his base, that part of the country. They vote in a very high percentage to vote him into office. So he's very, very sensitive to that group, to farmers and to agriculture. And thus, soybeans take on a big role. Also, soybeans are key in our trade with China, roughly half of all the soybeans we make here, produce here in the United States, goes to China. So that's the kind of the key, connect the dots between what's going on here and what's going on there. So those are the two things that make soybeans, you know, particularly important in this conversation and debate.
Well, and it's as if the Farmer Senate lost this giant market in China.
Absolutely. I mean, this is devastating to them. If we can't figure this out with China, then this is a complete mess. I mean, the president's trying to make up for it with this $12 billion in aid, but and you called it a bailout, and that's exactly what it is. It's taxpayer money to help bail out an industry that's getting creamed by this tariff policy that's going nowhere. So explain that to me. And by the way, the longer this continues, the price tag is probably going to rise here. $12 billion is not going to cover the price tag. And just think about how you implement this policy. What does it mean exactly? Is a farmer going to take a plane to Washington, go in front of a board of Trump folks and say, this is why you need to cut me a check? I mean, that's what he's doing with the manufacturers around the steel and aluminum imports. So is that really what we're talking about here? Farmers are just not going to go for it for very long.
Well, Mary, let me quote a couple of Republican senators. One, Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky: if tariffs punish farmers, the answer is not welfare for farmers. The answer is remove the tariffs. Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska: the trade war is cutting the legs out from under farmers, and the White House's plan to spend $12 billion on golden crutches. America's farmers don't want to be paid to lose. They want to win by feeding the world. These are Republicans, and they're not happy about both this bailout and also the tariffs.
Well, I think they're saying what their constituents are saying. Farmers themselves, through their organizations, have expressed dismay that this is what is happening to them. They don't want the golden crutches. As far as how gold the crutches are, I agree with Mark. These crutches aren't all that gold. $16 billion worth of soybeans would have been sold to China this year alone. It's a $12 billion bailout. As he said, as this goes on, that pile looks smaller and smaller, and we don't even know how or when it will be allocated. President Trump talked about huge sales to Europe as a way to kind of stem the bleeding here in soybean country. But, you know, the European market is very small compared to China. It's less than $2 billion worth of soybeans compared to $16 billion. Huh. So you can easily see that that is not going, European sales are not going to replace the sales that were lost to China. The other thing, of course, is that the European Commission President, Mr. Juncker, has no authority to order soybean purchases. So we really don't know how this is going to happen, when it's going to happen, but it is very clear that it's not sufficient to replace what's happening with the loss of markets in China.
Well, we are talking about soybeans. We're talking about trade, tariffs, the U.S. economy.
We're very talented. We can talk about a lot
of
things.
We can talk about all of this, and this is all part of the Trump administration's economy. We all had some good news this morning that the economy grew by 4.1% in the last 3 months. Talking with Mark Zandi and Mary Lovely, and you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And do stay with us. Much more after the short break. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I was looking at too many screens at one time, talking with Mark Zandi, chief economist of Moody's Analytics, which is here in the Philadelphia area. Mary Lovely joining us by telephone. She's a professor of economics at Syracuse University, also a non-resident senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. And yes, we're talking with economists about the economy and the very many complicated tentacles of our U.S. economy.
I should let everyone know, you do look a little like a stock trader here.
Yes,
what
true,
are you doing over
here?
Are you trading Facebook over here? Or what's going on?
I took care of that yesterday.
Oh, you did.
Yes,
okay.
I did. Yeah. I did. Let me get Richard, who called us up from Westchester, to join our conversation. And Richard, go ahead. You're on the air.
Just a quick clarification on this hypothetical trade in soybeans with Europe. I've always been led to believe that, number one, Europe does not permit GMO, genetically modified organism agriculture, into their countries. And number two, that 99% of American soybeans are GMO. So how do those factors jibe?
That's a really interesting point,
yeah,
Richard.
Point.
I'm looking at Mark Zandi.
I don't know.
Can you
Mary,
answer that?
Mary, do you know? That's a great point. I don't know.
No, I do not know. No one knows. We had this announcement yesterday. I think it took everyone by surprise in the sense that we just don't see the European market as making up for what happened in China. It's a great question.
It is, Richard, and I appreciate the call to Radio Times.
Which, by the way, highlights how messy this whole thing is, right? Because when you get down to the nitty and gritty of this, there's so many moving parts. And to say, oh, it's easy to win a trade war. No, it's not, because you have all these complications at every level. And to solve to win a trade war is not possible.
It's not possible.
Not possible. It hurts everybody.
Is everyone a loser?
Everyone is a big loser, right?
Yeah.
So to get up and say we're going to win this war. No, we're already losing. And by the way, we're all focused on the near term costs. We're talking about exports in the second quarter. This is doing significant long term damage to the United States, because the rest of the world is increasingly distrusting us, right? Because these are our rules, by the way. We put these rules in place, and now we're saying, no, we don't want to follow the rules. So they don't trust us. And if you don't trust your business partner, you don't do business with them. And that is going to hurt us in the long run.
Mary, let me pick up on something both you, Mark, referenced earlier. One is the tax cuts that were put into place, but also the debt, the deficit. How do you see those playing out, broadly speaking, in the U.S. economy?
Well, I think, and Mark can speak to this as well, we're potentially looking for a widening overall trade deficit for the United States. And this president has been singularly focused on bilateral trade deficits against the, you know, recommendations of most economists. This is not a good way to judge a trade relationship and whether it's beneficial to the United States. Our overall deficit is more of a concern because it tells us about how much debt we're piling on for the future. And so I think that there's going to be a relationship between trade policy and the debt that's caused by the tax cut, because this president seems to focus on that. If I can, I'd also like to go back to something Mark just talked about, which is about the fact that GMO issue speaks very loudly to the future, in the sense that this is one of the reasons why trade negotiations broke down with the European Union to begin with, which is their sets of rules on safety, product, environmental, labor, a whole host of issues that the U.S. and Europe were not able to see eye to eye on. So your caller who talked about the GMO, I think, put his finger on some of the issues that are going to make it very difficult for us to create deeper relationships that start to replace some of the ones that have been torn up. Also following up on Mark on the long-term impact, other countries are moving on. There are a record number of bilateral and multilateral trade agreements being negotiated today, partly in response to the United States turning its back on the rest of the world. Once those connections and networks get developed, there is a very big long-term cost for American businesses, because ultimately, you know, new suppliers will be found, new relationships will be made, and we won't be part of that because of the taxes on trade.
Well, let me go back to you, Mark, and going back to what I said in the introduction, we've got a low unemployment rate. I believe it's below 4%.
Four on the nose.
You got the stock market that's going gangbusters. I'm not smart enough to know exactly why, but we do have at least some signs in our economy of some good news. I hear from both you and Mary that there are deep concerns that you both have. But how do we reconcile all of this?
Well, the fundamentals of the American economy are good. President Trump inherited a very solid, strong economy. I mean, unemployment had been falling steadily since the Great Recession back 10 years ago. And we were on the right. We were on the right track. So there's a lot of good underneath. We're in pretty good shape. We're talking about things that have been the administration has put into place over the last 18 months that are, in my view, doing real damage to the economic fundamentals. Particularly, if we don't change those policies pretty soon.
Who was the biggest beneficiary of the tax cuts?
Large corporations.
Okay.
And that's why the stock market is close to record highs. Although. It hasn't really gone anywhere this year, largely because of the tariffs and the battle over trade. So despite the tax cuts, which were massive, stock prices have essentially gone sideways here. But the big business, the company I work for, Moody's, a large multinational corporation, we were a huge beneficiary of this. And very high income, high net worth households benefited enormously. Lower middle income households, not so much. And by the way, just to people might have forgotten this, but the tax cuts for individuals go away. They expire, right? So,
but not for corporations, right?
No, they're there forever. Now, I'm making, there's some good point being a dutiful employee of a large multinational. There are some benefits to lower marginal rates if they're paid for, right? These aren't all this stuff is we're borrowing money. Our deficits are expanding rapidly. I mean, just to give you a sense of the numbers, if you go back a couple of years ago, the deficit bottomed out at $400 or $500 billion per annum, which wasn't great, but we're not going to be over $1 trillion. And we're not going to get below $1 trillion for the as far as the eye can see, even assuming we don't have another recession. So we have all we've done is borrowed money and give the cash to high income households, high net worth households, and large businesses.
So, Mary, where does that leave then the average American? I'm not sure what the median salary is for a family. Something like $55,000. Where does that leave those people?
Well, that's a good question. You know, last fall, Christine Lagarde at the IMF and others were talking about the synchronous growth in the global economy. It looked like, you know, after such a long expansion, we were still going to have this moving together and growth of almost all the countries in the world. So we were looking at a period of time which would have allowed us to sort of lay some seed corn, that is, make investments that we needed in American education, American roads and bridges, airports, et cetera. Unfortunately, we're not seeing that. We are seeing some of the effect of the spending that comes from these tax cuts that Mark talked about, and those clearly are benefiting families, mainly because people are getting jobs. Real wages have started to pick up. Of course, they're not growing at the rate that people would like to see after a long period of time where many people saw very little wage growth. And I think American families are starting to see some of the positive benefits of that. For example, auto sales are way up this year. Mm. However, a lot of that, the tax cuts and the gains, are going to be taken away by some of these tariffs. In my own work, I've estimated the impact on an average family of the auto tariffs and what they will do to auto prices. And we estimate that, if you take a loan out for 5 years, it will take about one-fifth to a quarter of your tax cut away just in new taxes on auto imports. So we're going to see these taxes eat away at the growth that American families are feeling in their budgets.
I saw today that consumer spending rose 4% in the last quarter. I know our economy, Mark, depends on consumer spending. I mean, that's how we stay afloat.
Yeah, it does. If it's let me again say the economic fundamentals of the are good, we've got lots of jobs and low unemployment. Wage growth is starting to pick up. Credit is now amply available. Debt loads for most households are relatively low. So the backdrop is good, and consumers are doing their part. That 4% number goes back to where we started the conversation. That's not sustainable, right? Because that's juiced by the tax cuts. So, if I'm the government, I go out, I borrow money, I cut you a check, you go out and spend the money for a while you still have cash, right? It's going to juice things up, right? But when the cash runs out, then you don't have the money, and so growth will come back in. So enjoy the strong consumer spending numbers, these outsized consumer spending numbers for the next, say, year, because these tax cuts are massive. But after that, there's a big hole on the other side.
But how many boats and Mercedes-Benz can rich people buy? I mean, if they were really the beneficiary of these tax cuts, is that what's
driving? Oh, Marty, you would be surprised. Come on now. Really? You can't imagine how many boats and cars people can buy.
I know rich
how
people
many trips they
really,
can take
really well.
And how many clothes they can buy.
And how many
yeah.
homes they have.
Yeah,
I get
and actually,
it.
I will say, low- and middle-income households, it's not like they didn't get some cash, right? Everyone got a tax cut temporarily. And so a lot of those folks, as soon as they get that check, and if it's withheld, it ends up in your bank account, then you spend it, right? So, it's not right. Like, the primary beneficiaries were high-income households, but everyone got a tax cut.
That's Mark Zandi shaking his finger at me. And that's okay. Chief economist at Moody's Analytics. And Mary Lovely joining us by telephone. She's a professor of economics at Syracuse University. Also a non-resident senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics, I should say. And we are talking about our economy. We're talking about trade and tariffs and taxes and all the moving parts that are a part of our very complicated economy. And again, you can join us 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me read some comments here. One from Gary from our Facebook page. Is it fair to give Trump credit for the good economy this early in his presidency? And I heard from both of our guests that, sure, he deserves some credit. He got a good economy. And so far, at least looking at the numbers today, he gets credit for that. Facebook comment from Pascal. What tariffs are placed on our goods by our trade partners and how do they affect American workers? And I guess, Mary, if I can toss that to you, obviously part of a trade war, you have tariffs on both sides. Who is our, I guess, biggest foe in this trade war?
That's an interesting question because the president has called the EU a foe, actually using that word. We don't really have a foe here. Tariffs on industrial goods are very low. You can find one or two items and point to it and say, so for the U.S., it would be we have very high tariffs on imports of trucks. The European Union has a 10% tariff on the imports of cars. We can point to a few things and say this is emblematic of what's happening. But, of course, it isn't. Tariffs are very low on industrial goods. Where we would like to see liberalization that would benefit American workers is in services liberalization. Most of us work in the service sector, most of those of us in the U.S. So we'd like to see our ability to sell services abroad increased through trade negotiations. Those are complicated negotiations because they move into areas, particularly in developing countries, that governments have long protected, and they're worried about volatility from the global economy affecting their own economies negatively. So it's a complicated set of negotiations that we would need to do to liberalize services that would create jobs here at home. Other types of issues that were dealt with in the Trans-Pacific Partnership include labor standards abroad. That's been an important issue for the American labor movement. Our workers in other countries being competitive with us because they're mistreated or they're not getting their full wages or they don't have the right to unionize. So we have issues having to do with labor. We also have issues dealing with the environment and environmental standards. These issues were dealt with in the TPP, perhaps not fully to the level that everyone would be happy with, but there was significant progress made, and we turned our back on it. So the rest of the world has moved forward. As you know, the Trans-Pacific Partnership has moved forward under a new name. And is being signed by the remainder of countries that were involved in the original negotiations. And at some point, the U.S. may turn back to that and say this is something that will benefit us. So I would say it's wrong to think of trade as a negative for American workers. It is right to think about opportunities that lie ahead by further opening foreign markets to our goods and services.
Mark, let me ask you about immigration and the role that it plays in our economy. And we know about what's been happening along the U.S.-Mexico border. We know about the travel ban and its impact on people coming and going inside this country. How much do we need immigration and what kinds of immigration would we need to sustain our economy?
Immigrants are key to our economy. They are driving the growth in our labor force. So if there was no immigration, and roughly speaking, we get about a million immigrants coming into the country every year. If that came to a standstill, the labor force, the people who are working, would decline. We'd look, you know, like a Japan or, you know, even a Germany before they allowed more immigrants into the country. And it would slow growth. Obviously, if you have fewer workers, you're going to it's going to be more difficult for you to grow. So we rely critically on immigrants. Now, I think there's less debate about letting skilled, highly educated immigrants into the country, although there is some debate. But that seems like a slam dunk to me. You know, the best and the brightest come here to our universities, probably to Syracuse, as well as the University of Pennsylvania. Sure. And, you know, it seems logical to me if you graduate from an accredited American university, you get a visa stamped on your head and you say stay, right? So why, have these kids go back to the countries they came from and start companies and jobs there? Let them stay here. That's an obvious one. But I would also go so far to say, particularly given our demographics, I don't know, but you look great, Marty, but I'm getting older and I represent the largest single year age group in the country. I'm 58 years old. We're the boomers. We're retiring en masse, and that's going to affect the demand for labor of all skills. So we're going to need low-skilled labor as well. Just go talk to the farmers anywhere in the country. They can't find workers at any wage. So in my view, we need more immigrants of all kinds coming into the country. And this idea that we should restrict immigration is wrongheaded and will offset any of the benefit that the president thinks he's going to get from anything else he's doing. Tax cuts, trade policy, it's all going to be completely washed out by his immigration policy. And the only way to get to sustained, stronger economic growth is to allow more immigrants into the country, not fewer.
Mary, we're almost up on a break, but I'd be curious about your response to what Mark just said.
Well, I agree completely with Mark, and it goes to the point of thinking about the types of policies that raise American productivity. People were upset that 2% growth was the new normal. We have some people this morning crowing that 4 is the new Trump normal. As Mark has said, it's not. It's a temporary blip. To get solid growth, we need immigration, we need an innovation strategy, we need investment in American workers in American cities, in American rural areas. So I don't really understand why this the focus is on things that are restrictive as opposed to things that raise productivity. That's what we need to create a stronger U.S. economy.
And that's Mary Lovely, who joins us along with Mark Zandi, again talking about our economy and the various moving parts that are part of our economy. And again, we've got calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Obviously, how this economy affects you, that's the most important thing. Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Much more to talk about after this very short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowain talking with Mary Lovely from Syracuse University and the Peterson Institute for International Economics and Mark Zandi from Moody's Analytics. Let me get John from Camden to join us on Radio Times. And John, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
You're very
I'm really
welcome.
Enjoying the conversation.
Thank you.
But I would like to put some pushback on statements that have been made with regard to the fundamentals of the economy being strong. Since 1973, productivity has risen by 70-some percent, while wages have only risen, on average, I think, by about 12%. The share of productivity has gone to folks at the top. That has been because of tax policy, and much of that is being repeated with the Trump tax plan and his trade plan. And really, the numbers are good right now, but the economic fundamentals indicate crisis. And the average American... the average worker is having to work harder and longer to make the same amount of money.
It's a good point, John. I mean, I think we touched on some of that, but you brought it front and center, and it's certainly worth talking about. Mary, can you respond to John's view of the economy and how it has affected, the average person and that sense that the future doesn't look as rosy as it does for large corporations and for wealthy people?
Well, I think he's raising a very important point, and it's one that has led to a lot of dissatisfaction with some of the issues we talk about, immigration, trade. My own view is that this ire is misdirected, that it should be directed more at asking our policymakers to invest more in American workers and American places. We could talk about what some of those policies should be, but I would say that what has happened over the last 20 years is a fundamental realignment, kind of the international division of labor. And that has been mostly mediated by large corporations. In particular, people look at China and blame China for the loss of jobs. In fact, it was the deepening and developing of global supply chains which actually raised productivity and created an enormous amount of wealth. But we know where that wealth went in the United States. It went to the top 1% or 5%. And many workers toward the bottom of the income distribution saw little of the gain or perhaps even lost. Many people lost. So what do we do about that? We have to create smarter policies that help people, grab some of the good stuff that's being created. And we're not doing that. I think there are some very simple ways to do that. If you talk about, you know, redistribution, sometimes you're sort of labeled socialist, which is sort of funny because
that's the hot new thing now, isn't it?
Yeah. If we look back historically to the New Deal and other types of policies that were in my father's generation, you see that no, it was viewed as investing in the United States. Things like making sure that every American household has access to broadband, that children have great schools to go to, that companies, yes, they get tax cuts, but they also get other types of things, which is like working in a nation that has a great policy towards science and investment and innovation. So there's a lot of things we could be doing that we're not. We can't change what's happening in the world. These tariffs and immigration restrictions are not going to roll back what's happened in the rest of the world. We have to deal with it in a sense and make sure that those gains are really more broadly distributed.
Well, and infrastructure, it was mentioned earlier, Mark. I mean, we need new roads and bridges and all the stuff that comes with infrastructure.
Yeah, that seems like a slam dunk. But unfortunately, with rising budget deficits and debt and it's becoming more difficult for us to figure out politically how to get there. Lots of different ways. You know, one of the key ways is helping, there are groups that have been disenfranchised by the tough economy over the last decade, many of them in rural areas of the country, ex-urban areas. This is where the opioid crisis mm-hmm. is very severe. This is Trump country, the angst that we all have observed. But the best way, one of the key ways of helping those folks is improving the infrastructure into those communities. You know, you build just take the Pennsylvania Turnpike or a rail system and allow people in those parts of the country to move to where the jobs are, or that infrastructure will create jobs in those communities. So that seems like one of the most obvious ways, infrastructure spending, to help, address the issue that the caller brought up. By the way, the caller was referring to something I said
yes.
about the strong fundamentals, and he makes a very good point. I speak as an economist, and I tend to focus on the averages. And, that is at times a big mistake because there is a distribution, and we know that. And lower middle-income households have definitely been left behind. So I don't want to make – I completely sympathize with what the caller said. He's absolutely right. I mean, it's not just about the averages.
John, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. You can call as well. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499. And talking about what's been happening in parts of the country, Mark, one of the phrases that we hear is the hollowing out. I mean, literally, and I think the opioid crisis, which is it's in Philadelphia, but it's also out in rural parts of the country, is a symptom of a really serious problem that has economic impacts across the country.
It does. It goes back to, in lots of different ways, but I'll just highlight one, and that is back to the number of people that are working, right? One thing that's happened is the number of the participation rate of the labor force has declined. The number of people that are not working for whatever reason has increased relative to where, we have been historically. And that goes to the fact that many of these people in these pockets of the country have become literally disenfranchised. Now, one thing I will say that might be a little controversial, I do think trade policy contributed to the problems in those communities, right? I do think that NAFTA
how do you compete with-
and China, letting China into the WTO, opening up the global system, I think it was a boon to the American economy and to the averages, but it did hurt those communities. And that we were very poor as a nation, when we're still poor as a nation, in trying to figure out ways to help those disenfranchised groups. Here's one more thing I would say, though. The dark irony of all of this is that all of that pain and suffering related to the opening up of global trade for us is over. And all that remains for us going forward is the benefits of that open trade, because now we've lost those jobs. They're gone. And we are now going to be very competitive, particularly on the service side. Mary mentioned that. That's, you know, financial services, healthcare, logistics, retailing, advertising, all kinds of things. No one does that better than we do, and that's a lot of jobs and a lot of high-paying jobs. And if we close off ourselves from the rest of the world, we raise tariffs, we shut down immigration, we are going to, at the very time we were going to benefit enormously, all of us, you know, from top to bottom, we're going to benefit enormously from this process of globalization, we will have cut it off. It's just completely, it's just so sad. It's just the dark irony of that is very disconcerting.
Let me read some more comments. One from Julia: how does the amount of the current tax cuts compare to the stimulus spending during the Obama administration? Mary, do you have those numbers?
No, I don't. I hope Mark does.
I mean, there obviously the economy was, and the financial economy was just tanking at the very beginning of the Obama administration.
Right. And so I remember those days quite well. Hard to forget that as an economist. I can remember the days. I can give you the hours. So, you know, that so-called that package of stimulus was the Recovery Act passed in February of 2009. That was about $800 billion. Okay. And it was also – it was temporary tax cuts, and it was temporary increases in government spending. The tax cuts and spending increases we've seen so far are almost double that, to give you a sense of it. But here's the important point. Stimulus, temporary tax cuts and spending increases are very important in an economy that's struggling when unemployment's going to 10%. Because it would have been, you know, it was bad as it was, it would have been Armageddon if we hadn't done that. Stimulus in an economy that's performing well with low unemployment is just wrongheaded, because what's going to happen is it's just going to cause interest rates to rise, and it's going to offset the benefit of it. So it's just, you pick up a textbook, you read it, and the president is doing exactly the opposite of what the textbook says.
Here's an email from John. He says, how can anyone say the economy is good when we're constantly running trillion-dollar deficits? Mary, I'm going to toss that to you.
Well, again, the deficit is not an indication of how well the economy is doing. For example, we could say that we could get that deficit down by having a gigantic recession and people stop spending on imported goods. So these two things are not synonymous, the deficit and the health of the economy. Well, the way to think about the deficit, in my view, is to think about it, what are we spending on, and long-term, how much debt are we taking on as a nation? You know, when Norway discovered North Sea oil, they opened up a trade deficit as they invested. No one would say going for the oil was a bad thing. So it really does depend on what you're spending on. Today, we know that the deficit is increasing because we've had tax cuts, which by and large have benefited, you know, the highest income earners in America. We have to say, was that wise? Was it wise to use Marx's term, juice the economy at a time when the economy was already doing well? Many economists would say no, that was not the right policies to be pursuing. It would have been far better to be investing in the infrastructure and other things that we've been talking about. So I think the premise of the call is not a good way to look at the health of the economy. The trade deficit and the health of the economy do not, you know, move together.
Here's an email from Andrea. She says, Trump keeps bragging about how he has gotten black unemployment to a historically low level. However, we don't know what types of jobs these are. So has black unemployment gone down due to his policies? Mark, do we know the answer to that?
Black unemployment has declined. Unemployment for everyone has declined. And that goes to the strength of the underlying economy. We are creating lots of jobs, all kinds of jobs, certainly low paying, you know, leisure, hospitality, but also middle paying, you know, mm-hmm. K-12, construction, manufacturing, high paying financial services, professional services. So we're creating all kinds of jobs. And that goes to my earlier point about the fundamental strength of the economy. And everyone is benefiting from that. The question is, with regard to the president's policies, are those policies going to result in an economy that's sustainably strong and keep that unemployment low for generations to come? And in my view, the answer is positively, absolutely not. So we can enjoy this while you can, you know, because if we continue on this path of tax cuts that are deficit financed, spending increases that are deficit financed, tariff increases, restricted immigration, all those things are going to result in a much diminished economy, and the black unemployment rate, everyone's unemployment rate, is going to be a lot higher down the road, or just fewer people are going to be working because they can't find jobs. So this is about the future and, you know, where we're going to be down the road. Can you get unemployment low for a brief period of time? Absolutely. I can do it.
It's low now, right?
It doesn't take a genius. Go borrow money, give it to someone, have them spend it, and you'll get an economy that's juiced, you know, and that's what we're getting. You'll get low unemployment for a time. So it's on the backside of that that we have to worry.
Here's an email from Phil. He says, not everyone got a tax cut. I've analyzed my projected tax liability for 2018, and I find it's the same as 2017. Our household income is pretty high, but we get killed by the limitation on state and local income taxes. Why is this? And Mary, I think especially people who live in New Jersey, who pay really high property taxes, there might be some of the losers when it comes to this tax cut.
Well, I live in New York, so
so you know. Okay, fair enough.
The caller situation is pretty much my situation. Yeah, there were changes in the tax law that clearly made for losers and winners, even within people at the same earnings level. So, yeah, states, particularly blue states that had high state and local taxes, saw much less of the benefit than they would have otherwise because of the limitations on deducting these types of taxes. So there was distributional consequences across states. New Jersey and New York and California were among those that were harder hit by the ending of these preferences for state and local tax payments.
Those are blue states, I'll just say. I'm not sure if it was cause and effect, but just to add that, a tweet saying we're living in a golden or a gilded age. Do you agree, Mark?
When I think gilded age, I harken back to the 1920s. In the 1920s were a period of strong growth, speculation, high income, high wealth households did very, very, very well. Of course, as we all know, that period didn't end so well. So a gilded age kind of resonates with me to some degree.
But do you think we're in one?
Pardon me?
Do you think we're in one?
Yeah, I mean, in the context of the income and wealth distribution, absolutely. I mean, the last time the wealth distribution, the income distribution is as skewed as it is today, meaning the folks at the top have a much higher share of the pie, you have to go back to the so-called gilded age of the 1920s. So in that context, absolutely yes. I mean, I don't want to paint too dark a picture here, you know, because, there's a lot of right about our economy and about what we do, and it's very difficult for even bad policy to mess it up, right? You have to really work hard. I think the administration's working really hard to mess things up, but it's going to take a lot to derail this economy. And so I don't want to leave people with the impression that this is going to lead us down to a very, very dark path. This doesn't have to be the case, and we've got a lot of room to maneuver here because we have, at the end of the day, the American economy is the best on the planet because we respect the rule of law. We respect the property rights. We have been open to the rest of the world. We are inclusive. These are the things that have made us great, and it's going to be very difficult for somebody to take those things. We're trying really hard to do it, but it's going to be very hard to do it because those are ingrained in us. And I think as a result, it's hard not to be long-term optimistic.
Amir, I'm giving you the last word, and I'm giving you 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Well, I would agree with Mark, except that I would add another thing, which is that we're a market-based economy. And as Mark referred to earlier, what we're seeing is an administration that has a penchant for replacing kind of the invisible hand with the very visible hand of bureaucrats. We're seeing, companies having to beg to get their inputs untaxed with the steel and aluminum tariffs. We're seeing farmers now are being asked to take a dole instead of doing what they want to do best, which is, farm. So I think there is some concern about whether we can adhere and maintain the principles that have made our country great.
On that note, Mary Lovely, thank you so much for joining us on Radio Times.
You're so welcome.
And she's a professor of economics at Syracuse University, a non-resident senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. Mark Zandi, thank you for joining us as well.
So just you can put me on with Mary anytime. She's great. Yeah.
This was a good conversation. Yeah. Mark Zandi, chief economist at Moody's Analytics. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times, and you can find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and you can sign up for our newsletter. Adam Staniszewski, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Alex Stern. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you for joining us.